A new day had dawned, Thursday, and was now brightening its way toward noon. Ralph couldn't tell for sure, but he thought the speed with which the hours were passing down there on the short-time level was increasing. If they didn't wrap this thing up soon, Bill McGovern wouldn't be the only one of their friends they outlived. Clotho. Atropos knew that the higher purpose would send someone to try to change what he has set in motion, and now he knows who. But you must not allow yourselves to be sidetracked by Atropos. You must remember that he is little more than a pawn on this board. It is not Atropos who really opposes you. He paused and looked doubtfully at his colleague. Lachesis nodded for him to go on, and he did so confidently enough. But Ralph felt his heart sink a little just the same. He was sure the two bald doctors had the best of intentions, but they were pretty clearly flying on instruments just the same. Clotho. You must not approach Atropos directly either. I cannot emphasize that enough. He has been surrounded by forces much greater than himself. Forces that are malignant and powerful. Forces that are conscious and will stop at nothing to stop you. Yet we think that if you stay away from Atropos, you may be able to block the terrible thing which is about to happen, which is, in a very real sense, happening already. Ralph didn't much care for the unspoken assumption that he and Lois were going to do whatever it was these two happy gauchos wanted, but this didn't seem like exactly the right time to say so. Lois, what is going to happen? What is it you want from us? Are we supposed to find Ed and talk him out of doing something bad? Clotho and Lachesis looked at her with identical expressions of shocked horror. Haven't you been listening to? You mustn't even think of. They stopped, and Clotho motioned Lachesis to go ahead. If you didn't hear us before, Lois, hear us now. Stay away from Ed Deepnoe. Like Atropos, this unusual situation has temporarily invested him with great power. To even go near him would be to risk a visit from the entity he thinks of as the Crimson King. And besides, he is no longer in Derry. Lachesis glanced out over the roof, where lights were coming on in the dusk of Thursday evening, then looked back at Ralph and Lois again. He has left for... No words, but Ralph caught a clear sensory impression, which was part smell, oil, grease, exhaust, sea salt, part feel and sound, the wind snapping at something, perhaps a flag, and part sight, a large rusty building with a huge door standing open on a steel track. He's on the coast, isn't he? Or going there? Clotho and Lachesis nodded, and their faces suggested that the coast, 80 miles from Derry, was a very good place for Ed Deepnoe. Lois tugged his hand again, and Ralph glanced at her. Did you see the building, Ralph? He nodded. Lois, it's not Hawking Labs, but it's near there. I think it might even be a place I know. Lachesis, speaking rapidly as if to change the subject. Where he is or what he might be planning really doesn't matter. Your task lies elsewhere, in safer waters. But you still may need to use all of your considerable short-time powers to accomplish it. And there still may be great danger. Lois looked nervously at Ralph. Tell them we won't hurt anybody, Ralph. We might agree to help them if we can, but we won't hurt anybody, no matter what. Ralph, however, told them no such thing. He was thinking of how the diamond chips had glittered at Atropos's earlobes, and meditating on how perfectly he'd been trapped, and Lois along with him, of course. Yes, he would hurt someone to get the earrings back. That wasn't even a question, but just how far would he go? Would he perhaps kill to get them back? Not wanting to tackle that issue, not wanting to even look at Lois, at least for the time being, Ralph turned back to Clotho and Lachesis. He opened his mouth to speak, but she got there first. There's one other thing I want to know before we go any further. It was Clotho who replied, sounding slightly amused, sounding, in fact, remarkably like Bill McGovern. Ralph didn't care for it much. What is that, Lois?
Is Ralph in danger, too? Does Atropos have something of Ralph's we need to take back later on? Something like Bill's hat? Lachesis and Clotho exchanged a quick, apprehensive glance. Ralph didn't think Lois caught it, but he did. She's getting too close for comfort, that look said. Then it was gone. Their faces were smooth again as they turned their attention back to Lois. Lachesis. No, Atropos has taken nothing from Ralph, because up until now, doing so would not help him in any way. Ralph, what do you mean, up until now? Clotho, you have spent your life as part of the purpose, Ralph, but that has changed. Lois, when did it change? It happened when we started seeing the auras, didn't it? They looked at each other, then at Lois, then nervously at Ralph. They said nothing, and an interesting idea occurred to Ralph. Like the boy George Washington of the cherry tree myth, Clotho and Lachesis could not tell a lie. And at moments like this, they probably regretted it. The only alternative was the one they were employing, keeping their lips zipped and hoping the conversation would move on to safer areas. Ralph decided he didn't want it to move on, at least not yet. Even though they were dangerously close to allowing Lois to find out where her earrings had gone. Always assuming she didn't know that already, a possibility that did not strike him as at all remote. An old carny pitchman's line occurred to him. Step right up, gentlemen, but if you want to play, you have to pay. Oh, no, Lois. The change didn't happen when I started to see the auras. I think a lot of people catch a glimpse into the long-time world of auras every now and again, and nothing bad happens to them. I don't think I got knocked out of my nice, safe place in the purpose until we started to talk to these two fine fellows. What do you say, fine fellows? You did everything but leave a trail of breadcrumbs, even though you knew perfectly well what was going to happen. Isn't that about the size of it? They looked down at their feet, then slowly, reluctantly, back up at Ralph. It was Lachesis who answered. Yes, Ralph, we drew you to us, even though we knew it would alter your car. It's unfortunate, but the situation demanded it. Now Lois will ask about herself, Ralph thought. Now she must ask. But she didn't. She only looked at the two little bald doctors with an inscrutable expression, completely unlike any of her usual Our Lois looks. Ralph wondered again how much she knew or guessed. Marveled again that he didn't have the slightest clue, and then these speculations were swallowed in a fresh wave of anger. You guys, man oh man, you guys! He didn't finish, although he might have, if Lois hadn't been standing beside him. You guys have done quite a bit more than just mess with our sleep, haven't you? I don't know about Lois, but I had a nice little niche in the purpose, which means that you deliberately made me an exception to the very rules you've spent your whole lives upholding. In a way, I've become as much a blank as this guy we're supposed to find. How did Clotho put it? All bets are off? How very fucking true. Lois, you talked about using our powers. What powers? Lachesis turned to her, clearly delighted at the change of subject. He pressed his hands together, palm to palm, then opened them in a curiously oriental gesture. What appeared between them were two swift images, Ralph's hand producing a bolt of cold blue fire as it cut the air in a karate chop, and Lois's forefinger producing bright blue-gray pellets of light that looked like nuclear cough drops. Ralph. Yes, all right. We have something, but it isn't reliable. It's like... He concentrated and created an image of his own, hands opening the back of a radio and removing a pair of AA batteries encrusted with blue-gray crud. Clotho and Lachesis frowned at him, not getting it. Lois, he's trying to say we can't always do that, and when we can't do it for long. Our batteries go flat, you see? Understanding, mixed with amused incredulity, broke over their features. Ralph, what's so damn funny? Clotho,
nothing, everything.
You have no concept of how strange you and Lois seem to us. Incredibly wise and perceptive at one moment, incredibly naive at the next. Your batteries, as you call them, need never go flat, because the two of you are standing next to a bottomless reservoir of power. We assume that since you have both already drunk from it, you must surely know about it. Ralph, what in the world are you talking about? Lachesis made that curiously oriental hand-opening gesture again. This time, Ralph saw Mrs. Perrine walking stiffly upright, within an aura the color of a West Pointer's dress uniform, saw a shaft of gray brilliance, as thin and straight as the quill of a porcupine, poke out of this aura. This image was overlaid by one of a skinny woman encased in a smoggy brown aura. She was looking out a car window. A voice, Lois's, spoke. "Ooh, Minna, isn't that the dearest little house?" A moment later there was a soft, indrawn whistle, and a narrow ray of the woman's aura poked out from behind her neck. This was followed by a third image, brief but strong. Ralph reaching through the slot in the bottom of the information booth and gripping the wrist of the woman with a brambly orange aura. Except that all at once, the aura around her left arm no longer was orange. All at once, it was the faded turquoise he now thought of as Ralph Roberts' blue. The image faded. Lachesis and Clotho stared at Ralph and Lois. They stared back, shocked. Lois, "Oh no, we can't do that. It's like..."
Image. Two men in striped prison suits and little black masks, tiptoeing out of a bank vault, carrying bulging sacks with a dollar symbol printed on the sides. Ralph. "No, even worse. It's like..." Image. A bat flies in through an open casement window, makes two swooping circles in a silvery shaft of moonlight, then turns into Ralph Lugosi in a cape and old-fashioned tuxedo. He approaches a sleeping woman. Not a young rosy virgin, but old Mrs. Perrine, in a sensible flannel nightgown, and bends over to suck her aura. When Ralph looked back at Clotho and Lachesis, both of them were shaking their heads vehemently. Lachesis,
"No, no, 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 no! You couldn't be more wrong. Have you not wondered why you are short-timers, marking the spans of your lives in decades rather than in centuries? Your lives are short because you burn like bonfires. When you draw energy from your fellow short-timers, it's like..."
Image. A child at the seashore, a lovely little girl with golden ringlets bouncing on her shoulders, runs down the beach to where the waves break. In one hand she carries a red plastic bucket. She kneels and fills it from the vast gray-blue Atlantic. Clotho.
"You are like that child, Ralph and Lois. Your fellow short-timers are like the sea. Do you understand now?"
Ralph. "There's really that much of this oral energy in the human race?"
Lachesis.
"You still don't understand. That's how much there is."
Lois broke in. Her voice was trembling, although whether with fear or ecstasy, Ralph could not tell.
"That's how much there is in each one of us, Ralph. That's how much there is in every human being on the face of the earth."
Ralph whistled softly and looked from Lachesis to Clotho. They were nodding confirmation. "You're saying we can stock up on this energy from whoever happens to be handy? That it's safe for the people we take it from?" Clotho.
"Yes. You could no more hurt them than you could empty the Atlantic with a child's beach pail."
Ralph hoped that was so, because he had an idea that he and Lois had been unconsciously borrowing energy like mad. It was the only explanation he could think of for all the compliments he'd been getting. People telling him that he looked great. People telling him that he must be over his insomnia. Had to be, because he looked so rested and healthy. That he looked younger. Hell, he thought. I am younger. The moon had set again, and Ralph realized with a start that the sun would soon be coming up on Friday morning.
It was high time they got back to the central issue of this discussion. Let's cut to the chase here, fellas. Why have you gone to all this trouble? What is it we're supposed to stop? And then before either of them could reply, he was struck by a flash of insight too strong and bright to be questioned or denied. It's Susan Day, isn't it? He means to kill Susan Day, to assassinate her.
Clotho.
Yes, but...
Lachesis.
But that isn't what matters.
Ralph. Come on, you guys. Don't you think the time has come to lay the rest of your cards on the table?
Lachesis.
Yes, Ralph. That time has come.
There'd been little or no touching among them since they had formed the circle and risen through the intervening hospital floors to the roof. But now Lachesis put a gentle, feather-light arm around Ralph's shoulders, and Clotho took Lois by the arm as a gentleman of a bygone age might have led a lady onto a dance floor. Scent of apples, taste of honey, texture of wool. But this time Ralph's delight in that mingled sensory input could not mask the deep disquiet he felt as Lachesis turned him to the left and then walked with him toward the edge of the flat hospital roof. Like many larger and more important cities, Derry seemed to have been built in the most geographically unsuitable place the original settlers could find. The downtown area existed on the steep sides of a valley. The Kanduskeag River flowed sluggishly through the overgrown tangle of the barrens at this valley's lowest level. From their vantage point atop the hospital, Derry looked like a town whose heart had been pierced by a narrow green dagger. Except in the darkness, the dagger was black. One side of the valley was Old Cape, site of a seedy post-war housing development, and a glossy, flossy new mall. The other side contained most of what people meant when they talked about downtown. Derry's downtown centered around Up Mile Hill. Witcham Street took the most direct course up this hill, rising steeply before branching off into the tangle of streets. Harris Avenue was one of them, that made up the west side. Main Street diverged from Witcham halfway up the hill and headed southwest along the valley's shallower side. This area of town was known both as Main Street Hill and as Bassey Park. And near the very top of Main Street's rise, Lois almost moaning,
"Dear God, what is it?"
Ralph tried to say something comforting and produced nothing but a feeble croak. Near the top of Main Street Hill, a huge black umbrella shape floated above the ground, blotting out stars which had begun to pale toward morning. Ralph tried to tell himself at first that it was only smoke, that one of the warehouses out that way had caught on fire, perhaps even the abandoned railroad depot at the end of Nibold Street. But the warehouses were further south. The old depot was farther west, and if that evil-looking toadstool had really been smoke, the prevailing wind would be driving it across the sky in plumes and banners. That wasn't happening. Instead of dissipating, the silent blotch in the sky simply hung there, darker than the darkness. And no one sees it, Ralph thought. No one but me, and Lois, and the little bald doctors. The goddamn little bald doctors. He squinted to make out the shape within the giant death bag, although he didn't really need to. He had lived in Derry most of his life and could almost have navigated its streets with his eyes closed, as long as he did not have to do so behind the wheel of his car, that was. Nevertheless, he could make out the building inside the death bag, especially now that daylight was beginning to seep over the horizon. The flat circular roof which sat atop the curving glass and brick facade was a dead giveaway. This throwback to the 1950s, designed very much tongue-in-cheek by the famous architect and one-time Derry resident, Benjamin Hanscom, was the new Derry Civic Center, a replacement for the one destroyed in the flood of 85. Clotho turned Ralph to look at him.
"You see, Ralph, you were right. He does mean to assassinate Susan Day. But not just Susan Day."
He paused, glanced at Lois, then turned his grave face back to Ralph.
"That cloud, what you two quite correctly call a death bag, means that, in a sense, He has already done what Atropos has set him on to do. There will be more than 2,000 people there tonight. And Ed Deep no means to kill them all. If the course of events is not changed, he will kill them all. Lachesis stepped forward to join his colleague. You, Ralph and Lois, are the only ones who can stop that from happening.
In his mind's eye, Ralph saw the poster of Susan Day, which had been propped in the empty storefront between the Rite Aid pharmacy and Daybreak Sundown. He remembered the words written in the dust on the outside of the window. Kill this cunt. And something like that might well happen in Derry. That was the thing. Derry was not precisely like other places. It seemed to Ralph that the city's atmosphere had improved a great deal since the big flood 8 years before. But it was still not precisely like other places. There was a mean streak in Derry, and when its residents got wrought up, they had been known to do some exceedingly ugly things. He wiped at his lips and was momentarily distracted by the silky, distant feel of his hand on his mouth. He kept being reminded in different ways that his state of being had changed radically. Lois, horrified. How are we supposed to do it? If we can't go near Atropos or Ed, how are we supposed to stop it from happening? Ralph realized he could see her face quite clearly now. The day was brightening with the speed of stop-motion photography in an old Disney nature film. We'll phone in a bomb threat, Lois. That should work. Clotho looked dismayed at this. Lachesis actually smacked his forehead with the heel of his hand before glancing nervously at the brightening sky. When he looked back at Ralph, his small face was full of something that might have been carefully muzzled panic.
That won't work, Ralph. Now listen to me, both of you, and listen carefully. Whatever you do in the next 14 hours or so, you must not underestimate the power of the forces Atropos unleashed when he first discovered Ed and then slashed his life cord.
Ralph, why won't it work?
Lachesis, sounding both angry and frightened. We can't just go on and on answering your questions, Ralph. From here on, you're going to have to take things on trust. You know how fast time passes on this level. If we stay up here much longer, your chance to stop what is going to happen tonight at the Civic Center will be lost. You and Lois must step down again. You must!
Clotho held up a hand to his colleague, then turned back to Ralph and Lois.
I'll answer this one last question. Although I'm sure that with a little thought you could answer it yourself. There have already been 23 bomb threats regarding Susan Day's speech tonight. The police have explosive sniffing dogs at the Civic Center. For the last 48 hours they have been x-raying all packages and deliveries which have come into the building, and they have been conducting spot searches as well. They expected bomb threats, and they take them seriously. But their assumption in this case is that they are being made by pro-life advocates who are trying to keep Miss Day from speaking.
Lois, dully. Oh, God, the little boy who cried wolf.
Clotho. Correct, Lois.
Ralph. Has he planted a bomb? He has, hasn't he?
Bright light washed across the roof, stretching the shadows of the twirling heat ventilators like taffy.
Clotho and Lachesis looked at these shadows, and then to the east, where the sun's top arc had broken over the horizon, with identical expressions of dismay.
Lachesis.
We don't know, and it doesn't matter. You must stop the speech from happening, and there is only one way to do that. You must convince the woman in charge to cancel Susan Day's appearance. Do you understand? She must not appear in the Civic Center tonight. You can't stop Ed, and you daren't try to approach Atropos, so you must stop Susan Day.
Ralph, but it wasn't the strengthening sunlight that shut his mouth,
or the growing look of harried fear on the faces of the little bald docs. It was Lois. She put a hand on his cheek and gave a small but decisive shake of the head. No more. We have to go down, Ralph. Now. Questions were circling in his mind like mosquitoes, but if she said there was no more time, there was no more time. He glanced at the sun, saw it had entirely cleared the horizon, and nodded. He slipped his arm around her waist. Clotho, anxiously.
Do not fail us, Ralph and Lois.
Ralph. Save the pep talk, short stuff. This isn't a football game. Before either of them could reply, Ralph closed his eyes and concentrated on dropping back down to the short-time world. There was that sensation of blink, and a chill morning breeze struck his face. Ralph opened his eyes and looked at the woman beside him. For just a moment he could see her aura wisping away behind her, like the gauzy overskirt of a lady's ball gown. And then it was just Lois, looking 20 years younger than she had the week before, and also looking extremely out of place in her light fall coat and good visiting the sick dress, here on the tar and gravel hospital roof. Ralph hugged her tighter as she began to shiver. Of Lachesis and Clotho there was no sign. Although they could be standing right beside us, Ralph thought. Probably are, as a matter of fact. He suddenly thought of that old corny pitchman's line again. The one about how you had to pay if you wanted to play, so step right up, gentlemen, and lay your money down. But more often than not, you were played instead of playing. Played for what? A sucker, of course. And why did he have that feeling now? Because there were a lot of things you never found out, Carolyn said from inside his head. They led you down a lot of interesting sidetracks and kept you away from the main point until it was too late for you to ask the questions they might not have wanted to answer. And I don't think something like that happens by accident, do you? No, he didn't. That feeling of being pushed by invisible hands into some dark tunnel where anything might be waiting was stronger now. That sense of being manipulated. He felt small and vulnerable and pissed off.
Well, we're back, Lois said through her briskly chattering teeth. What time is it, do you think?
It felt like about 6 o'clock, but when Ralph glanced down at his watch, he wasn't surprised to see it had stopped. He couldn't remember when he had last wound it. Tuesday morning, probably. He followed Lois's gaze to the southwest and saw the Civic Center standing like an island in the middle of a parking lot ocean. With the early morning sunlight kicking bright sheets of reflection from its curved banks of windows, it looked like an oversized version of the office building George Jetson worked in. The vast death bag, which had surrounded it only moments before, was gone. Oh, no, it's not. Don't kid yourself, buddy. You may not be able to see it right now, but it's there, all right. Early, he said, pulling her more tightly against him as the wind gusted, blowing his hair, hair that now had almost as much black in it as white, back from his forehead. But it's going to get late fast, I think. She took his meaning and nodded.
Where are Lachesis and
On a level where the wind doesn't freeze your ass off, I imagine. Come on, let's find a door and get the hell off this roof. She stayed where she was a moment longer, though, shivering and looking across town.
What has he done? She asked in a small voice. If he hasn't planted a bomb in there, what can he have done?
Maybe he has planted a bomb, and the dogs with the educated noses just haven't found it yet. Or maybe it's something the dogs aren't trained to find. A canister stuck up in the rafters, say. A little something nasty Ed whipped up in the bathtub. Chemistry is what he did for a living, after all. At least until he gave up his job to become a full-time psycho. He could be planning to gas them like rats.
Oh, Jesus, Ralph.
She put her hand to her chest, just above the swell of her bosom, and looked at him with wide, dismayed eyes. Come on, Lois, let's get off this damned roof. This time she came willingly enough. Ralph led her toward the roof door, which he fervently hoped they would find unlocked.
2,000 people,
she almost moaned as they reached the door. Ralph was relieved when the knob turned under his hand, but Lois seized his wrist with chilly fingers before he could pull the door open. Her up-tilted face was full of frantic hope.
Maybe those little men were lying, Ralph. Maybe they've got their own axe to grind, something we couldn't even hope to understand, and they were lying.
I don't think they can lie, he said slowly. That's the hell of it, Lois. I don't think they can. And then there's that. He pointed at the Civic Center, at the dirty membrane they couldn't see but which both knew was still there. Lois would not turn to look at it. She put her cold hand over his instead, pulled the roof door open, and started down the stairs. Ralph opened the door at the foot of the stairs, peeped into the sixth-floor corridor, saw that it was empty, and drew Lois out of the stairwell. They headed for the elevators, then stopped together outside an open door with Doctor's Lounge printed on the wall beside it in bright red letters. Inside was the room they had seen on their way up to the roof with Clotho and Lachesis. Winslow Homer prints hanging crooked on the walls, a Silex standing on a hot plate, hideous Swedish modern furniture. No one was in the room right now, but the TV bolted to the wall was playing nevertheless. And their old friend Lizette Benson was reading the morning news. Ralph remembered the day he and Lois and Bill had sat in Lois's living room, eating macaroni and cheese, as they watched Lizette Benson report on the doll-throwing incident at Woman Care. Less than a month ago, that had been. He suddenly remembered that Bill McGovern would never watch Lizette Benson again, or forget to lock the front door, and a sense of loss as fierce as a November gale swept through him. He could not completely believe it, at least not yet. How could Bill have died so quickly and so unceremoniously? He would have hated it, Ralph thought, and not just because he would have considered dying of a heart attack in a hospital corridor in bad taste. He would have considered it bad theater as well. But he had seen it happen, and Lois had actually felt it eating away at Bill's insides. That made Ralph think of the death bags surrounding the Civic Center, and what was going to happen there if they didn't stop the speech. He started toward the elevator again, but Lois pulled him back. She was looking at the TV, fascinated. We'll feel a lot of relief when tonight's speech by feminist abortion rights advocate Susan Day is history, Lizette Benson was saying. But the police aren't the only ones who will feel that way. Apparently both pro-life and pro-choice advocates are beginning to feel the strain of living on the edge of confrontation. John Kirkland is live at the Derry Civic Center this morning, and he has more. John? The pallid, unsmiling man standing next to Kirkland was Dan Dalton. The button on his shirt showed a scalpel descending toward an infant, with its knees drawn up in the fetal position. This was surrounded by a red circle with a diagonal red line slashed across it. Ralph could see half a dozen police cars and two news trucks, one with the NBC logo on its side, in the background of the shot. A uniformed cop strolled across the lawn leading two dogs, a bloodhound and a German shepherd, on leashes. That's right, Lizette. I'm here at the Civic Center, where the mood could be termed one of worry and quiet determination. With me is Dan Dalton, president of the Friends of Life organization, which has been so vehemently opposed to Miss Day's speech. Mr. Dalton, would you agree with that assessment of the situation? That there's a lot of worry and determination in the air? Dalton asked. To Ralph, his smile looked both nervous and disdainful. Yes, I suppose you could put it that way. We're worried that Susan Day, one of this country's greatest unindicted criminals, will succeed in her efforts to confuse the central issue here in Derry. The murder of 12 to 14 helpless, unborn children each and every day. But Mr. Dalton, and... Dalton overrode him. We are determined to show a watching nation that we are not willing to be good Nazis, that we are not all cowed by the religion of political correctness, the dreaded PC. Mr. Dalton, we are also determined to show a watching nation that some of us are still capable of standing up for our beliefs and to fulfill the sacred responsibility which a loving God has... Mr. Dalton, are the Friends of Life planning any sort of violent protest here? That shut him up for a moment, and at least temporarily drained all the canned vitality from his face. With it gone, Ralph saw a dismaying thing. Underneath his bluster, Dalton was scared to death. Violence? He said at last. He brought the word out carefully, like something that could give his mouth a bad cut if mishandled. Good Lord, no! The Friends of Life reject the idea that two wrongs can ever make a right. We intend to mount a massive demonstration. We're being joined in this fight by pro-life advocates from Augusta, Portland, Portsmouth, and even Boston. But there will be no violence. What about Ed Deepnow? Can you speak for him? Dalton's lips, already thinned down to little more than a seam, now seemed to disappear altogether. Mr. Deepnow is no longer associated with the Friends of Life, he said. Ralph thought he detected both fear and anger in Dalton's tone. Neither are Frank Felton, Sandra McKay, and Charles Pickering, in case you intended to ask. John Kirkland's glance at the camera was brief but telling. It said that he thought Dan Dalton was as nutty as a bag of trail mix. Are you saying that Ed Deepnow and these other individuals, I'm sorry, I don't know who they are, have formed their own anti-abortion group, a kind of offshoot? We are not anti-abortion, we are pro-life, Dalton cried. There's a big difference, but you reporters seem to keep missing it. So you don't know Ed Deepnow's whereabouts, or what, if anything, he might be planning? I don't know where he is, I don't care where he is, and I don't care about his offshoots either.
You're afraid, though, Ralph thought. And if a self-righteous little prick like you is afraid, I think I'm terrified.